Unstoppable, unshakable, body rolls off the tongue, unfakeable, it's unavoidable, he's so relatable, read between the lines, start to loosen up your mind.
And welcome again to Shark Farmer Radio. I'm your host, Rob Sharkey. We're in the studios today just outside of a very busy Bradford, Illinois. It's planting season.
Woot woot. I'm so excited.
It's opening day. Yes, I went out and tried it this morning, and I just kept going. So yeah. We got about 60 acres of soybeans. This is the first year we've ever tried soybeans first.
It's so weird to see you planting soybeans now.
I blame Steve Pitsticks from up there by Maple Park. I blame him. So if they don't work, then we're all going to, I'm just going to spend like a, remember how we did the whole episode against the DJ from up north?
Yeah.
We're going to do the whole episode against Steve Pitstick.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yes. So soybeans going in first. I think those are the only planters rolling in the neighborhood. Lots of spraying getting done. Lots
Everybody's getting nervous too. Everybody's running around. People who aren't planting are running around. Look at everybody who's planting and it's like chaos.
Yeah. We're working dirt. Dan the man is out there. He just gave me a text like 2 minutes before we go on the air. And I said, I'm about ready to go on the air. And he's like, well, is Ian around, our son? Because we've got a knee-high boulder out there. And I'm thinking, where? Because I know where I'm at. First of all, I would remember a boulder that's knee-high anywhere. Where, I don't know where these rocks come from every year. It just, I swear they grow. They like,
they do.
Forced. We probably live under a volcano.
Well, and how is Ian going to get a knee-high boulder?
What's I wasn't going to ask there? That. I wasn't, yeah, I just let it go. But yes, we should get to today's guest because we got, it's What the Farm Day, which means we're always joined by our very lovely co-host, Leslie Kelly from Saskatchewan. How are you doing, Leslie?
I'm great. So glad to hear you guys are planting.
Yes. Anything going on up there?
No, there's no planting in the house or at the farm today because, well, last night, in the middle of the night, I checked on the four-year-old, and as I was walking out of his room, they spent about 4 hours that day putting together a Lego tractor. I stepped on the Lego tractor, broke it into pieces, punctured my foot, and so there is no carpet farming today, unfortunately.
Do you know what? No, honestly, you sound selfish when you talk about puncturing your foot when you destroyed his livelihood. He can't carpet farm today. Yes.
I know. He was so upset when he woke up.
So if you go to sharkfarmer.com, go to What the Farm podcast section, you'll hear the interview with our latest guest, Michelle Payne from Indiana. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm great. Thank you. The sun is shining, but there aren't any planters rolling in West Central Indiana, I'm afraid.
Did you destroy your children's dream overnight like Leslie did?
No, but yesterday we had my daughter's heifers out in the yard. We didn't destroy anything, but I thought one of them was going to drag us down the driveway. But, you know, that's a whole other thing. So, no, the Lego story definitely trumps that one.
Do you show, I mean, do you put halters on? Do you want to break these, the heifers, to lead?
Oh, yes, they're all broken. They're all my daughter's show heifers. So they're, quite frankly, spoiled, rotten brats. And we have, I think she's 2 weeks old now. She had her first adventure on the halter yesterday, so that was entertaining.
See, when we were in 4-H, we would get calves, and they were wild, and the dad would break them. He'd put them on the back of a tractor, put the halter on and the tractor, and just drag them around the barnyard till they started walking.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, we don't do that so much with dairy cattle because, you know, we have to be able to handle them and milk them and those sorts of things. And moreover, my daughter's an athlete, so I consider her breaking her cattle to be excellent cross-training.
It was one of the more entertaining things we ever did. But Michelle, why don't you give everybody a little bit of background about yourself?
Well, thanks for having me. I am a professional speaker and author. I've been a Holstein breeder since I was age 9. I live in West Central Indiana and spend my time traveling about North America, working with farmers and food folks to try to make a connection between both sides of the plate. And I am excited because I literally just turned in my manuscript about 10 days ago now for Food Bullying, a new book that's coming out to upend people's thinking about food and farming in November.
Now, yeah, and that's interesting. I wanted to jump right in. Leslie, had you heard much about food bullying before we interviewed Michelle?
No, not the actual term, but now after listening and doing the podcast, where I came to the conclusion that I've been part of food bullying and have been food bullied.
I'd go back to Michelle, but now I'm curious. What have you done to bully people?
Well, we had a really good conversation over Easter because we were talking about this term food bullying, and we talked extensively about the food allergy bullying, how people have heard hurtful jokes, the pressure to eat certain foods if they're allergic, the teasing, and just maybe not grasping the seriousness. So that came up as one of the biggest things that we've all been part of.
Yeah, you know, and I've done that. I used to joke about peanut allergies until you meet someone that actually has them, and it's pretty serious. I mean, do you find a lot of people kind of change their mind, Michelle, after meeting someone?
Well, sure. Personal experience, I think, is whether you're talking food or farming, is what brings perspective to all of this. And I actually had a person who anonymously contributed her food bullying story, and that was where she had coworkers who would leave open bowls of peanuts on their desk whenever they knew she was coming into the office, and would open up a jar of peanuts when she would come into their office space or cubicle. And she is deathly allergic to peanuts. So it's just really sad that people have to do that. I mean, I don't think that's a common everyday story, but food bullying certainly is a part of our decisions in restaurants. When you read menus that are claimed to be cleaner or food with integrity, all the way to the 40,000 products in the grocery store we talked about on the podcast.
That's right. This one's going to go fast. We're talking to David Leslie Kelly and Michelle Payne. We'll be back talking more food bullying right after the break.
A rule breaker. Hold tight, he'll roll you through every acre.
1 year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Think about a quarter inch of rain. That's all it takes to activate Armazon Pro Herbicide in your corn and protect against weeds. Now think about a full inch of rain, the amount most other herbicides require for activation. How long will you have to wait to get that? The weeds hope you choose another herbicide. Your corn hopes you choose Armazon Pro Herbicide. Pick a winner. Talk to your BASF rep about Armazon Pro Herbicide today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run fans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
And welcome back to Shark Farmer Radio. Today we're talking with my co-host from What the Farm podcast, Leslie Kelly, and Michelle Payne, who is the guest of today's What the Farm podcast. Michelle, I got kind of a surprising message today on the old Twitter box, and it was from the person that contacted you about the cleft palate. I and kind of told me the whole story. I was surprised. I didn't doubt it, but I guess I must have acted surprised and befuddled when I heard that story. Can you kind of share that a little bit?
Sure. Well, just to give a little bit of context, I asked my social media community, which includes agriculture folks, parents, professional speakers, dietitians, so it kind of runs the gamut, about their food bullying stories. And I was dumbfounded with how many that were that poured in, both publicly and privately. And one of the ones that I had found was from a first-time mom here in Indiana who shared the story of when she was pregnant with her son, and this was about a decade ago now. He was diagnosed with cleft palate while she was still pregnant with him, and the office staff at her doctor's office asked if she wanted an abortion because most people apparently, quote, can't deal with it, unquote. And she did not, and then they went on to, throughout the course of the conversation, to when she explained to them that she was from a farm, they went on to say that perhaps the reason why he had cleft palate was because she had exposed him to chemicals somehow on the farm. So that is an egregious example, as I'd said in the podcast, of implied power of position, because the physician obviously was using that as an opportunity, perhaps not intentionally to bully, but what kind of mother wouldn't feel horrid to be blamed? I mean, moms have enough questions about what they're doing when they're pregnant anyhow, right? So that's the backstory. What?
I don't know. That's more of a Leslie question.
Oh, yeah. Leslie, I have never experienced so much love, happiness, and joy, but also the shame and the guilt that comes with being a mom.
Yes.
But one of my biggest questions, though, is why is it, I would say over the past maybe couple decades, food bullying is becoming more prominent. So why is there so much food bullying now?
Well, I think it's an easy place to bully because, unfortunately, we all know the outcome of school bullying and the horrible things that have happened to children in school. But when you also look at the fact that it's not socially acceptable to demonize people for their political interests, for their religious interests, even for their sexual preference, why is it okay to bully people around food is what the question that I always have to step back and ask. And I think psychologically, because of the fact that we have social media and there are so many keyboard cowards, obviously you have to give a bit of a nod towards what's happened society-wise. But without getting into the deep, muddy waters, it's pretty clear to me that the marketing has centered around fear. And with that fear comes distrust. And with the fear and distrust comes bullying. And one of the things that I outline in the food bullying book is the cycle of bullying. And because of the fact that we're four generations plus removed from the farm, we know in the States only 1.5% is on a farm. The reality is that people don't trust what they don't know. And if they don't know how their food is raised, they're not going to trust it. Therefore, they're going to be bullied. Very long explanation. Sorry.
Okay. So if you're a new mom, right, you got a new kid, you're mm-hmm. worried about everything. All you want to do is make that kid healthy or whatever. And you go into the store and you see kind of the fear market, kind of the labeling that we talked about. Is that what you're considering as part of food bullying?
Absolutely. So the implied power product is something that centers on claims on food, clean food, the absence claim labels. So what's free, whether it would be non-GMO, hormone-free, antibiotic-free, those sorts of things. And I actually suggest to new moms and anyone who has experienced food bullying, the best way to deal with it is to know your standards. Know your social, know your ethical, know your environmental, and know your nutritional standards before you ever walk in that store.
So gone are the days of, you know, in farming with consumers, you know, just trust us. And one way to prevent or stop bullying is to gain more trust. But how do you even, like, I wouldn't necessarily think of developing standards as the first thing to do when I go into a grocery store. So how do we earn that trust back to people who are so far removed from farming?
As far as farmers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that that gets back to the fact that we all have to be responsible for engaging in the conversation, even when it's planting season and even when it's calving season and harvest season and all the many seasons. And I know most of your listeners probably would prefer to be on their tractor, working their land, or dealing with their animals. I get it. However, if we want to protect our ability to farm as we best see fit and produce food the way that we know how to as the experts, we have to engage in the conversation proactively. And that means building your story and being able to tell your story, whether it's in person or online. Because as you tell that story, I think it helps people understand what their own story is around food and farming and to develop their standards.
Do you think every farmer should, though?
Should what? Tell their story?
Yeah.
I know that you probably are going to go down the route that some people probably shouldn't bother talking because of the way they sound. You know, there's exceptions to every rule. By and large, do I think farmers need to engage in the conversation? Yes. Do I think there needs to be rules of engagement? Yes. What I always try to help people understand through my speaking programs is that you may be the only representative that that person comes across from agriculture. So are you representing agriculture well?
And what do you think those rules of engagement are? Because I think that's one of the hardest things is outside of starting the conversation is getting into those conversations where, you know, being defensive or the other person is being defensive on their stance.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time in my table talk training that I have talking with farmers particularly about how not to be defensive. And I'll call people on the carpet, you know, point blank, and I get defensive myself. I mean, I understand it's a challenge. But the rules of engagement are to, A, always take the high road, B, know where your line in the sand is, and C, don't invest energy where you don't want energy to flow. So always take the high road means that even when the keyboard cowards are out there slamming you online, to take the high road and respond in a way that is for everyone else who is watching, because it's a fishbowl.
Yep. Today we're talking with Michelle Payne and Leslie Kelly. We want to hear your food bullying stories. Go to sharkfarmer.com, shoot us an email. When we come back, we're going to be delving more into this whole bullying concept. We'll be back right after the break.
Read between the lines, start to loosen up your mind.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Every farmer knows there are lots of steps to having a perfect season. Don't let your fertilizer plan be the step that trips you up. For over 35 years, AgroLiquid has had the experts and the products that'll help you move closer to your target. No matter when you apply fertilizer, no matter how, you'll hit the bullseye. AgroLiquid is the perfect fit for your planter fertilizer program. To learn more, go to agroliquid.com. AgroLiquid moves you closer to your target.
Farmers, wouldn't you love to have one set of concaves for all crops? With Estes Performance Concaves, you can. That means no more backbreaking work, changing concaves, or downtime. Plus, Estes Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage and a cleaner sample. It's the best money you can spend on your combine. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and take back your bushels. That's 765-650-4131.
Yeah, I've been podcasting for, what, 2.5 years there, Mrs. Sharkey?
Yes.
Somewhere around there. Actually, maybe coming up on 3. I can tell when things are going to get talked about. And I knew after recording this one that the food bullying was actually going to come in second to the side conversation we started with. So I'm sure the world is wondering, Leslie, how did the pussy willow hunting go?
We went out twice, and we hunted a lot and found some really great pussy willows. I have 2 vases now full of the branches.
Vases. You guys say everything wrong. Now, in the podcast, though, I did make a mistake. I was thinking a cattail was a pussy willow, and I left it in, even though it was embarrassing for me.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because usually you find pussy willows near the cattail, so it's okay that you made that screw up. I forgive you.
Yeah. There's a lot of jokes we aren't going to make right now. Today, Leslie and I are talking to Michelle Payne from out there in Indiana, a speaker and an author and all sorts of things. We're talking food bullying. Now, our producer out in South Dakota, Alex, he's fascinated. He's texting us left and right about like actual assaults where people are like using food allergies as actually picking on people, like you mentioned, like opening the peanuts and stuff like that. But that's pretty rare, isn't it, Michelle? Oh, did we lose Michelle? Must have lost Michelle. Leslie, are you still there?
I am still here. So okay. Over the conversations around Easter, when we were thinking of the food allergy bullying, it came up that we've seen it on TV. Like, I remember going to Peter Rabbit, the movie, and how the little animals tried to kill the owner of the house by, I think he was allergic to strawberries or blackberries. So it comes up even in that kind of scene.
Yeah, the peanut thing is what I keep going back to, too, because I thought that was kind of ridiculous, especially when I loved when you had the restaurants that had the peanuts there. And then all of a sudden you couldn't have them and like on airplanes. And I'm thinking, oh, this is silly. This is ridiculous. And then I met someone that actually has a severe peanut allergy. And if they even are in a room with them, I mean, they break out to the point where they almost can't breathe. So it's after you meet someone like that, you're like, okay, I guess I was kind of a jerk for complaining I didn't get my peanuts at Lone Star.
Yeah. And I would have to say the same. Like, I would have made, you know, the comments before and without knowing, you know, now my girlfriend, her little guy has a severe allergy. And even thinking, like, we took a cake to school and I put mini eggs on it, not thinking that they were likely made in a facility that contains traces of nuts. So it's, yeah.
Yeah. Michelle, we got you back on.
We did.
Awesome. Thank you, Alex, for putting her back on. Maybe because we mentioned Alex, I think he drops calls. He's kind of vindictive that
no,
way.
Totally me.
Okay. So, well, before I forget and we get immersed in this, can you tell everybody where they can find your stuff?
Sure. You can go to foodbullying.com if that's easy for you to remember. You can go to causematters.com as well, and you can connect with me on social media at mpayne, P-A-Y-N, speaker, S-T-E-A-K-E-R. Always love to connect with your listeners and answer questions, argue, bully, all of that good stuff.
Yes, and we'd like to have your food bullying stories. You email them to us at sharkfarmer.com. Now, okay, so Michelle, I mean, as far as like food bullying goes, what do you think is the most common example?
Well, the most common example are the product claims that we see in the grocery store. You know, we were laughing the other day, but I've seen boneless, salt-free bananas labeled, grass-fed peaches, the whole hormone-free claim, which now is supposedly illegal. There is no question in my mind that food bullying happens most prevalently on those 40,000 products that we find across grocery stores, and they are used to overwhelm consumers and differentiate a product to make money for the company.
Yeah, I've never heard the boneless banana before. Leslie, do they have boneless bananas up in Canada?
Now I'm going back to all the different kinds of bananas that I've ate. Or the grass-fed peaches. So would the grain-fed peaches not have any fuzz on them?
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. Sometimes I don't even, it's like you're tempting me. You're daring me to go places that we shouldn't. Let's stay on task here, Leslie. Okay, Michelle, you've written, what was like the response when you wrote your other two books? I mean, are you finding people that are involved in agriculture or outside of agriculture that want to hear these type of topics?
Well, both. No More Food Fights was certainly targeted towards the agriculture community since it's two-sided and one side is for the farm. Food Truths from Farm to Table, the response that I've heard from farmers is that they read the book and they realize that they, too, can have the conversation. And in that book, I very conscientiously selected the 25 food truths, if you will, for people to talk about. And then food bullying, most people's response, and it's very early since it's coming out in November, has been similar to yours, and that's first, what is food bullying? And then secondly, well, who's involved and what does it represent? To me, it is a major marketing issue that we have as a part of the $5.75 trillion business. And I really think that farmers need to start getting on top of this to help people understand where their food comes from.
So because it's such a big business, and now you see the Instagram photos, you know, the foodie movement, how food has become more of a sense of belonging. Do you think food bullying is going to get worse in the future?
Yes, I do. We don't have time to get into it today, but one of the things that I've looked at as part of this is the neuroscience of what happens with both food intake, but more importantly, food information. And I do believe that marketers are going to look at some of that neuroscience information and leverage it against us. So there is no doubt in my mind that food bullying has been a trend that is going to continue to grow.
Okay, you talked about the example of a farmer that went all organic and then was basically being given the business by his neighbors, which, I mean, as a farmer, I kind of see that whole thing happening. But how serious do you think that really is? How common do you think that is when someone decides to go the organic or natural route?
Well, and to be clear, I actually was talking about Ryan Weeks in Nebraska, and he is about 50% organic. So he has 50% of his land that he still farms conventionally, including GMOs, and 50% that he's either organically growing or transitioning to organic. I would say that the bullying amongst farmers for farmers who make different choices on how to produce food is becoming more and more prevalent, and frankly, I think it's very sad. I think it makes a pretty bad statement about agriculture and our egos and our need to be right if we can't look at our neighbors and applaud them for the way that they choose to support their family.
Yeah, we could talk about this all day. Yeah, unfortunately, Leslie, I'm looking at the
clock.
I knew what was going to happen. That's why I interrupted you, because you were coming right in. Yes, but
I'll come back, Leslie, okay?
I'm guessing you won't. If you go to sharkfarmer.com, go to sharkfarmer.com, email us your food bullying stories. Michelle Payne, thank you so much for being on the podcast. It was a pleasure. As editing goes, it was probably the best I've ever had. So a big thank you for that, because it was done on Easter night. Yes, Leslie, as always, it's a pleasure, and I'm glad you were able to find your pussy willows in time. So thank you, Michelle and Leslie. And to everybody else, we hope you catch us next time.